Welcome to today's quarterly All Employment Network call. My name is Derek Shields, and I will serve as the moderator for this All-EN call. Before we begin with today's presentations, I will cover some housekeeping items and our agenda. Let's move to the next slide, please. Next slide. Okay, to start, here are some key points that will help you in participating with today's meeting. Per the ticket program agreement, please recall that Part 3, Section 11, Subsection I indicates that EN staff are not permitted to record this meeting nor capture the transcript. We are at TPM doing that and will provide a summary of this call along with the recorded transcript for your action in our meeting notes and all EN call recap. That's on the Ticket to Work website, and we'll provide that out afterwards. Next, for questions, please use the MS Teams chat section and feel free to use that throughout the meeting. If you wish to ask your question aloud, you can raise your hand and your mic will be unmuted. If joining via telephone, it is a two-step process to ask your question. First, raise your hand using star 5 and you will be unmuted. Next, you'll need to press star 6 on your end to speak. If joining via MS Teams and you wish to ask a question aloud, we encourage you to use the raise your hand feature. You could ask multiple questions, but we do ask you to limit yourself to a single question so others may be able to ask theirs as well. If you have other questions, you can send those to the email box on the screen, enoperations@yourtickettowork.com. .ssa.gov. Those questions that are not answered during today's live event will be forwarded to the appropriate panelists for response. Importantly, closed captioning is available for participants who join using the MS Teams application or through a separate closed caption link provided in your Gov delivery email and in chat today. To turn on the closed captions in MS Teams, please go to the menu through the three ellipses at the top of the MS Teams window, those three dots. And underneath there in that menu, you can click more and go down to the language and speech section and select turn on live captions. Otherwise, you can use the link option that's been provided to you, and you can paste that link in a separate browser and we'll open a separate window that you can follow the full closed captioning. So we do thank you in advance for engaging with us today and for attending and appreciate you using those. And we'll provide some reminders during our two Q&As of how to participate as we get into today's content. Next slide, please. As I mentioned, I'll cover our agenda before we begin with our formal presentations today. After I complete this logistics and agenda review, I will introduce Robert Paff, who will provide a welcome and opening remarks from Social Security. Following Rob, we have Ellie Stinnett, who's with us today to provide an overview of the ticket program evaluation. Following Ellie's remarks and presentation, we will have a Q&A session focused on the ticket evaluation for Ellie and her colleague, Seth Hartig, who has joined us as well today. After that, Charles Killen is back with us today to cover the expedited reinstatement content, and he has a presentation for us. Following Charles, we'll hear EN updates and reminders from Aaron Weidman. And to close out, our final presentation will be provided by Tiffany Beeman from our Program Integrity Department with several updates for you. After Tiffany, we'll have a Q&A for Charles, Aaron, Tiffany, and Rob. So do consider your questions as we hear from Ellie of the overview of the ticket evaluation and prepare those because Ellie and Seth will be with us for that portion, but not that final Q&A session. So thanks for that. That's our housekeeping, logistics, and a review of the agenda. Before we hear from Robert with his welcoming and opening remarks, if we go to the next slide, we'd like to take a moment to welcome our new employment networks with us. On the screen, we have a list of 7 new employment networks that I'll read off, and we do welcome you to the community of VNs working to support beneficiaries in their employment journeys. We have AA Take Charge Milestone LLC from Texas. We have AAA Take Charge, also from Texas. We have Vocational Consulting of Ohio LLC. We have Access Group, Inc. from Arkansas. Selective Case Management, Inc. from Michigan. Resume Solutions LLC from Texas. And My Ideal Job LLC from Connecticut. Again, welcome to these new employment networks and their staff who are with us today. We appreciate the work that you do to support beneficiaries in their employment journeys. And with that, it is now my pleasure to introduce Robert Paff, the Director of the Office of Employment Support and Social Security's Office of Research, Demonstration, and Employment Support. Rob, over to you, please.
Thank you, Derek, and good afternoon or good morning to you. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for all of your efforts in helping our beneficiaries return to work. We appreciate the service you provide. I have a couple of updates I would like to share with you today. First, I will start with, as you may be aware, we do have a new commissioner. It is former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley, who was confirmed by the Senate to become the current Commissioner of Social Security. The Commissioner O'Malley started right around the beginning of the new year, and one of his major initiatives he started with right off the ground was something that he calls Security Stat. And Security Stat is described on the website as an agency-wide cross-cutting program to measure performance through data-driven decision-making. And as I understand how this works, I have not been to Security Stat meetings, but as I understand, they occur weekly. They include multiple SSA executives throughout the agency to discuss pressing and urgent topics. Many times these topics surround customer service issues, operational issues, systems issues, and the like. The overarching goal here is to improve customer service, and things such as waiting times, for telephone service or in the field office and things of this nature are at the root of the conversations that are occurring. So that's Security Stat. If we receive any information that would be of use or that we think would be helpful to the EN community, we will pass that along. We have not briefed the commissioner on the Ticket to Work program as of yet. The second topic I will share with you is, as you may recall, we used to have a SSA operations executive liaison who worked with the Ticket to Work program. That was Ann Robert. She used to work in the Chicago region. She was one of the executives in the Chicago region, and she has retired from the agency. We recently received two new regional contacts, regional liaison contacts from the Kansas City region. We just met with them several days ago. We will share more information with you as we get information, but that partnership we're going to leverage to help improve the dialogue between the ticket program and our operations staff moving forward. So good news there. The next item I will talk about, and again, these topics are pretty much all aligned with each other. We've heard your feedback in terms of, you know, issues that you're having with operations and receiving services and things of that nature. And we are working to establish and improve that relationship between the ticket program and operations. So another thing that we've done is that we have recently received approval with operations leadership and put together a newsletter. This is called the Your Ticket to the Red Book newsletter that we have distributed to all of operations. All of the regions received this, and central office operations staff. And basically, this is a short newsletter, about a page and a half, roughly, which discusses various topics that are about the ticket program or employment policy issues to share with and familiarize operations staff with. So one example is the benefits planning query. We included some information about the BPQI in the recent release of the newsletter. So there are just chunks of topics that will be included in this newsletter, and we will be releasing this newsletter periodically moving forward. So again, more to come on that as we get further into this, but this is a new initiative underway. Another topic I'll discuss also in regards to operations is we have worked with the Office of Communications to put together what is called frontline training for SSA operations staff. These are little segments in a training that goes out to the field office staff, teleservice center staff. It's about 30 minutes of training in each frontline training session, and that contains multiple topics. And our pieces are very brief. There may be 2, 3, 4 minutes that we have put into these trainings. And again, the goal here is to familiarize operations on the ticket program and employment policy issues. So for the first training that was just released several weeks ago, we included a segment on benefits planning query and the beneficiary satisfaction survey, which you're going to hear more about shortly. The next topic that I'll share with you, and this is the final one, I promise. We have set up and established a quarterly area work incentive coordinator call, or AWIC call. And as you may be familiar, many of you are, our AWICs are our ticket to work specialists that are working in the regions and are points of contact for the program throughout the country. And so they handle all kinds of issues related to return to work. They're experts for the regional offices and share information and disseminate information about ticket to work. And during that call, this is the first call we've had with the AWICs, and this was all of the AWICs nationally. Our topics included a discussion on the SSA 821 form, issues that the AWICs identify or problem areas with the 821. Charles Killen, who was on this call, provided information and discussed that with them as well. And we also talked about other topics from our employment policy team we shared with the AWICs. The call went very well, and there was a lot of engagement, so we will be doing these calls quarterly moving forward. And that is all I have. So at this point, I will turn it back to Derek. Derek?
Thanks, Rob, for being with us and for your remarks and updates across the program. We appreciate that. We will now move to our next presenter, Ellie Stinnett. Ellie is an economist in the Office of Research and Demonstration, and Ellie's here with us to provide a brief presentation on the overview of the ticket evaluation that's occurring, and following her remarks, we will have our first Q&A. Ellie, over to you, please.
Thank you. You can go to the next slide. So SSA is conducting an evaluation of the Ticket to Work program. Over the next few months, our contractor, Mathematica, will be conducting listening sessions with service providers and beneficiaries. The objectives of these sessions is to learn about individuals' experiences with the Ticket to Work program. Your clients may be contacted to participate, If so, please assure them of the legitimacy of the study and encourage them to participate in the listening sessions. Additionally, you may be contacted to participate. If so, we encourage you to participate. Hearing about these individual experiences, both on the beneficiary side and the service provider side, will contribute to a more robust evaluation of the program. Lastly, these listening sessions will not be your only opportunity to share your experience with Mathematica. So if you're not contacted now in this round, rest assured that you will likely be contacted at some point over the life of the evaluation. As the data collection continues, we'll bring you more information about opportunities to participate. Thank you for your time. Back to you, Derek.
Thank you very much, Ellie, for the ticket evaluation overview. We appreciate you being with us for those remarks. And if we can move to the next slide, what we'd like to do now is to have our question and answer session number one, which would allow for questions for Ellie regarding the evaluation that you may have. So on this slide, we have a few reminders. I mentioned these when we opened up, but let's just go through them in case they are helpful for you. Over the telephone, it's a two-step process. First, raise your hand by dialing *5, and you will be unmuted by our facilitator. You'll be identified, and then you'll need to press *6 to unmute yourself. That's if you're calling in. If you're on MS Teams, you have a couple options. You can use the chat, as people have been adding comments and to chat. You can do that, and we will voice those. Or you can raise your hand, and your mic will be unmuted by our facilitator. So we have those two different options, and we have Ellie and two team members from Ellie's team with us today, Seth and Kara. So let's start out by going to Catherine. Catherine, I want to check in with you to see if we have any questions, please.
Hi, Derek. Thank you. We have no questions at this time, no raised hands. So if you'd like to ask a question, go ahead and just raise your hand, and we'll give you access. Thank you.
Thanks, Catherine. And let's go over to Anna to check questions coming in from chat. Anna?
Eugenia Cox would like to know if the DR agencies will be allowed to participate in the evaluation.
Thank you, Anna. Ellie?
Yes. At this time, that we are including VR agencies in the listening sessions.
Thank you, Ellie. Anna, back to you for another question, please.
Marilyn Reboir would like to know, what is the timeline of the evaluation to be completed?
The evaluation will be completed September of 2027. So we have quite a long time.
Thank you, Ellie. And just to note that Eugenia put a comment in there, thank you for your first answer as well. And Mary Lynn has also noted, thank you for your response. Anna, back to you for one more question, please.
Janine Colbert would like to know, how can she sign up as a participant?
So for the listening sessions, if you are chosen to participate, you'll be directly contacted. For future data collection efforts, again, we plan on directly contacting all of the participants.
Thank you, Ellie. Let's now go to Catherine for the individual who has raised their hand. Catherine?
Hi, Derek. Thank you. Diane, you're unmuted. Just click your microphone above, and you can ask your question.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Pardon me. I'm curious to know if there's any would prepare our ticket holders with, in addition to telling them that they may get a call from Mathematica, in terms of the nature of the questions, what they should expect, anything like that?
So you cut out a little bit, but what I think you're asking is if there's anything that you should share with the beneficiaries to prepare them for the listening sessions. And in response to that, I would say, yeah, you do not need to share anything with them. This is largely for Mathematica to understand the experiences the beneficiaries have had and the service providers. So they don't need to come with any responses prepared. They'll just share about their own experience.
Thank you for the question, Diane, and thank you, Ellie.
Okay.
Go back to Anna for another question from chat.
Sure. Tawanda would like to know, what are exactly the listening sessions?
Sure. So a listening session is similar to a focus group where a group of people will get together with a moderator and the moderator will ask questions and the group will discuss. A listening session is less structured than a focus group, so there are fewer prepared questions that the moderator brings. It's more conversational.
Thanks for the question and for your response. Let's go back to Catherine. We have a raised hand, Catherine.
Thank you, Derek. Tiffany, you are unmuted. Just click the microphone and ask your question.
Hello. So my question is about the calling of, you know, the beneficiaries to participate. We sometimes have a hard problem just getting hold of our beneficiaries to do our quarterly follow-up or monthly follow-up. How long are you going to try to get a hold of somebody if they don't call you back? Or what happens if they say that they do not want to participate? Would they just be taken off of the list?
So your first question, how long are we waiting? I don't know that off the top of my head. I would have to go look at that. But if a participant responds or a potential participant says they do not want to participate, we certainly would no longer reach out to them.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ellie. And let's go back over to Anna for another question from chat. Anna?
Kevin would like to know, what is the objective of the review?
So the objective of the listening sessions is for our contractor, Mathematica, to learn about individual experiences that both beneficiaries and service providers have. And how this feeds into the evaluation is it ensures that as we are working through potential surveys and we're analyzing data, that we're asking the right questions. So when beneficiaries and service providers share their experiences, that tells us what we need to be looking for more of, where we need to get more detail, et cetera. So that's the objective of the listening sessions. Additionally, Kara has just reminded me that I should remind all of you that if, in case your beneficiary that you're working with is provided, is selected to participate, it might be good if you go ahead and issue a notice ahead of time, just letting them know that they might be selected so that they know it's legitimate if and when Mathematica reaches out.
Thank you, Ellie. Appreciate that response. And go back to Anna. We have about another minute for this Q&A session. Anna, any other questions in chat for Ellie?
Sure. Amanda is asking, will you be reaching out to the ticket holders via telephone only for the listening sessions? Will there be anything mailed out to them as well?
Sure. So we don't anticipate sending anything by mail, but we will be looking at reaching out both telephone and also through email and other electronic means.
Thank you, Ellie. Anna, any other questions?
Not for Ellie.
Excellent. Well, thank you for these questions. In order to ensure we have enough time for our other presenters in our second Q&A panel, I'd like to thank Ellie and Seth and Kara for being with us and for Ellie's remarks and participation today. And at this point, we will now proceed to our next presenter. Next slide, please. I am now pleased to welcome Charles Killen back to the quarterly All-EN call. Charles is with the Office of Employment Support in the Policy and Innovation team, and he's going to provide a presentation today on expedited reinstatement. Charles, over to you, please.
Hey, thanks, Derek. Next slide, please. So I'm going to focus today on expedited reinstatement, or EXR as it's commonly known, versus new initial claim. Like, what should the person do? So I'm going to kind of explain the difference to you there. We'll start out with reminding everyone that An EXR is a safety net for people who successfully return to work and therefore lose their entitlement to SSDI or SSI. Now, they would lose that entitlement due to those worker earnings. And while some of this will be covered in the explanation, what EXR does, it allows individuals to request benefits to be reinstated without filing a new application for or a new claim for benefits, as long as that request is made within 5 years from the month that benefits ended. And how does the EXR help the individual as opposed to a new claim? Again, a lot more specifics later, but in a sense, the EXR provision allows an individual to receive up to 6 months of temporary cash benefits while we conduct a medical review to decide if we can reinstate those cash benefits. An individual may also be eligible for Medicare or Medicaid during the provisional benefit period. Next slide, please. So some differences. With regard to protective filing, if someone decides to file an EXR, that is a protective filing for a new initial claim, should that later be decided that would have been a better option for them. However, if the individual decides to file a new initial claim, that is not a protective filing to later file an expedited reinstatement request. Next slide, please. So with regard to insured status, in other words, does the individual have enough work on their Social Security record? Do they have enough work credits to qualify for SSDI? For EXR, an individual is requesting that we reinstate a prior period of disability, and that insured status issue was broached at the prior period of disability initial claim. Therefore, insured status is not an issue when you file an EXR. However, with a new initial claim, we have to make sure that the individual still meets insured status. So in other words, sometimes it's not an option for a person to file a new initial claim if they don't have current insured status for Social Security disability insurance benefits. Next slide, please. There are also some minor differences in the definitions of disability. Because the medical review for EXR is different than in a new initial claim. For EXR, we find an individual eligible if their current condition is the same as or related to the conditions for which they were originally approved and they have not medically improved from that condition. With regard to a new initial claim, we find an individual eligible if we determine that they cannot perform substantial gainful activity because they have a medical condition. Now, that would be any medical condition that is expected to last at least 1 year or result in death. So it's subtle here in our quick review that we're going over today, but the difference here is that we're not really looking at their ability to work when we look at the EXR. We're looking to see if do they still have the same condition they were originally approved for. With a new initial claim, we have to find out if they not only do they have a disability, but is that disability enough to keep them from performing substantial gainful work? Next slide, please. There's also an issue about retroactivity. Now, both EXR and the new initial claim are eligible for up to 12 months of retroactive benefits if medically disabled and not performing substantial gainful activity during that retroactive period. For an EXR, the date of entitlement cannot be before the date the benefits terminated, and we cannot apply the concepts of unsuccessful work attempt or averaging when we're determining that. Now, with a new initial claim, the date of entitlement cannot be prior to the last period of SGA work, or when they're when their last benefit terminated, but we can apply UWA and averaging should there be short periods of SGA work or work that was done that fluctuated just above and just below the SGA thresholds. Next slide, please. The monthly benefit amount. The benefit amount for EXR may be different than the benefit amount for a new initial claim. And this is going to vary on a case-by-case basis. And so when they go in to file, this will be explained to each individual at the times of the claims interview. Next slide, please. Provisional payments. And we mentioned those in the introduction here. For an EXR, expedited reinstatement, SSA pays up to 6 months of provisional benefits while we make a medical decision. And during that time period, they may also be eligible for Medicare or Medicaid during that provisional period. Now, with a new initial claim, SSA does not pay provisional benefits. So they need to wait for the decision to be done. And very similar to the very first time that they applied for a Social Security disability. Next slide, please. Medicare. Now, to maintain Medicare coverage, the individual must remain medically eligible. So there is a difference between EXR and a new initial claim. For EXR, if SSI denies the request for EXR because we determine they've medically improved, like they do not have the same or similar condition that they had before, their Medicare coverage will terminate upon that decision. However, if they don't file an EXR and they file a new initial claim, Medicare coverage is not terminated just because we denied that claim. We have to conduct a different medical review to determine eligibility for extended Medicare coverage. And while all that is taking place, the Medicare coverage will continue. Next slide, please. So for future work attempts, there's a trial work period. I'm sure many of you know what that is. It's a 9 months in which the SSDI beneficiary can earn as much money as they can and still receive a cash benefit. With EXR, there is once an individual receives 24 months of EXR payments. Now, those months are not necessarily consecutive, but when they have actually received 24 months of EXR payments, then a beneficiary is eligible for a new trial work period, and once that's complete, a new extended period of eligibility that lasts 36 months. Now, that 24-month period is called the initial reinstatement period. With a new initial claim, as soon as the beneficiary is eligible for a new trial work period, followed by a new 36-month EPE, as soon as they're eligible for benefits. So there's not this 24-month IRP when you file a new initial claim. Next slide, please. So talk a little bit more about that initial reinstatement period. That's the month we reinstate disability payments, EXR, for the EXR is the first month of the IRP. So someone applies, they request expedited reinstatement, they're approved, and we reinstate benefits. That first month is the first month of the IRP. Now, that IRP can last for 24 months, as I said, not necessarily consecutive, and it won't end until the individual has received 24 months of payable benefits. Now, for SSDI, we're going to pay benefits for any month during the IRP that earnings are not at or above the SGA threshold. For SSI, we're going to apply the regular income and resource counting rules to determine if a benefit is payable during one of those months. Next slide, please. So obviously that ends here. So if anybody has any questions, I'll be taking those at the end. So I appreciate your time and the opportunity to tell you a little bit more about EXR. Thanks, Derek.
Thank you so much, Charles, for your presentation on EXR. And we welcome you back for the Q&A panel after our next two presentations. Okay, now let's move to our next presenter. I'm pleased to introduce Aaron Weidman. Aaron is a social insurance specialist in the Office of Employment Support, and she'll be providing some EN updates and reminders for us. Aaron?
Hi, all. So I only have two updates for you guys today. First, I want to start with saying the mandatory EN Annual Performance Outcome Report, or APOR, and annual security awareness certification collection period closed on February 26th. So thank you all for participating in the APOR and Security Awareness Certification. We have received positive feedback regarding the abridged APOR survey and will continue to use this abbreviated version moving forward. We have also heard your feedback and will make it more clear next year that the SSA 222 must be signed during the collection period, or that signature date has to fall in between the collection period dates. We are currently working on reviewing all APOR submissions and security awareness certifications. We will reach out if we have any questions upon review. If you do not hear from us, your security awareness certification and APOR has been accepted, or in other words, no news is good news. So second, as you all know, SSA sends routine reminders to ENs regarding safeguarding PII. So yesterday, a reminder was sent out describing SSA's policies and procedures on protecting and reporting the loss, compromise, or potential compromise of PII. So more specifically, that reminder message outlined your EN's obligations to establish your own policies and procedures to protect PII and to implement SSA's prescribed procedures for reporting lost, compromised, or potentially compromised PII, which are outlined in part four, section 8 of the TPA. So please review that reminder message and email enservice@ssa.gov with any questions you might have concerning reporting or protecting and reporting, I should say, the loss, compromise, or potential compromise of PII. So that is all that I have for you guys today. Back to you, Derek.
Thank you very much, Erin, and we welcome you back in a few minutes for the Q&A portion and appreciate your participation in chat as well today. If we can proceed to the next slide. I'm now pleased to welcome Tiffany Beeman, a Program Integrity Senior Supervisor in the Ticket Program Manager's Program Integrity Department. Tiffany will provide us some updates from the Program Integrity Department. Over to you.
Thank you, Derek. Next slide, please. Now, just a few updates and reminders from Program Integrity. For the Ticket Assignment Review, also known as TAR, newly awarded ENs are required to submit IWPs for review. Once you have submitted 10 compliant IWPs, we will be granting you permission to assign tickets via the ticket portal. Please note that new employees of the EN are not required to submit IWPs for review unless the EN is currently on TAR or ticket assignment review. EN assignment request template. The EN assignment request template has been made available for ENs that are unable to assign tickets via the ticket portal. The template includes all the information needed to process a ticket on assignment request, and you can find that ticket on assignment request template on the Your Ticket to Work website, and that link will be posted in the chat for you. Next slide, please. Ticket assignment reminders. Tickets should be assigned via the portal, the ticket portal, immediately, but no later than 14 calendar days from the most recent individual work plan or IWP signature dates. ENs that receive an error message when using the ticket portal to assign tickets should send their request for assistance to Program Integrity via GSO or by fax, and they must include the IWP with that request for assistance submission. IWP submission cover sheet, also made available now, has been the IWP submission cover sheet. ENs send IWPs to Program Integrity for multiple reasons, which can be, again, assigning tickets via the ticket portal, ENs on TAR or services and supports. and the IWP submission cover sheet was developed to ensure that the IWP is directed to the appropriate person. This cover sheet can also be found on the Your Ticket to Work website. That wraps it up for Program Integrity. Back over to you, Derek.
Thank you, Tiffany, for bringing up those reminders and also the two resources that Tiffany was referring to on the website were also dropped in chat by Brittany, and you can access those through those links as well. We have now gotten to our second Q&A session as advertised, and we have plenty of time today for your questions. Before we go to the panelists for that Q&A session, just a reminder for how to participate. Over the phone, two-step process. First, raise your hand by dialing *5 and we'll unmute you. And then you'll need to hit *6 to unmute yourself to speak. If you're with us on MS Teams, you can use the chat as many of you have been doing, or you could use the raise hand feature and then we'll call on you as a few folks are lining up to do. We encourage you to use the raise your hand feature and we'll get to as many folks and questions as possible today. And with that, let's now turn to the questions for today's presenters. Catherine, let's start out with you with the raised hands.
Hi, Derek. Thank you. Teresa, you're unmuted. Just click the microphone and ask your question.
I raised my hand by accident. I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Tiffany, you are now unmuted.
Hello. I have a question about the EXR. So I have a consumer that is now in that portion of her process with the trial or the Ticket to Work program. And she is thinking that she is going to have to apply because of her disability and not being able to work. Should we go ahead and have medical documentation ready for when we call and do the application process? Or should we wait until after she has reached out to Social Security and found out exactly what they need?
Well, it doesn't hurt to have the information available at the time that she does file, but we'll be looking at what her condition is at what their condition is at the time that they have to stop working due to their disability. So, it really doesn't matter if you have it together now or when you contact us. They are going to ask for the similar information that they would have asked her the first time that she filed, and the names of doctors, any medical records that she can provide up front would be helpful. But really all we need is of the name of her medical providers, and we'll contact them for more information.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you, Tiffany. Derek, we have another individual with a question. Hi, Kristen. You are unmuted. Go ahead and ask your question, please.
Hi, thank you. It's two parts, but it's the first part that, so I love talking about EXR as it is that great safety net for people. But I get a lot of questions sometimes if there are like any stats on it, like how many applications a year, like, does Social Security receive, and, you know, of those applications or requests, like how many are approved and put back on benefits?
That's certainly something I can check into for you. I'm not part of that that staff that would keep those stats, but I could definitely check in to see if we have anything available for you.
Thank you. And I'll share
that with these guys.
Thank you. The second part of that, and just for clarification, that if somebody did go through EXR and it was an unfavorable decision, I understand they don't have to pay if they did receive up to 6 months back, but they could file a new application, right? Is that correct? Is that what you went over today?
It is. The only thing that I would re-point out is that the fact that they, they filed I think in your situation, they filed an EXR and were medically denied, and now they want to file a new claim. They can certainly do that. And we would also consider that EXR filing, even though it was denied, as a protective filing for the new claim in case the condition they now have is not the same as or related to their other condition, but it is disabling enough to keep them from working SGA in the national economy, they may be eligible under the new claim. And if they haven't worked at SGA since they filed the EXR, we can use that EXR filing as a protective date. And what that essentially means is we count them as having filed the new initial claim back when they filed the EXR. So it's a good thing for them.
Yes, thank you. And that's what I come across a lot when I get phone calls of, you know, they still have that same previous condition, but they also have new conditions that come up. So that's where I'm like, maybe an initial one, because they won't look at, any other medical conditions except for the previous one. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Kirsten. Sure.
Appreciate that. Charles, if you do the research and then get that back to our team, then we'll be able to get that response over to Kristen. Appreciate that in the first part.
Assuming it's available, I don't want to speak for someone else. I'll check and see what's available and get to you whatever we have or a response accordingly.
Sure.
One way or the other.
This is Derek. Understood. And we'll make sure that we communicate that over to Kristen. Appreciate that. Let's switch from the raised hands. If you do want to ask a question, go ahead and raise your hand or call in and raise your hand with *5 and we'll get to those in a moment. But for now, let's switch over to questions that have gone unanswered in chat, and I've been able to track a little bit of activity over in chat. Anything that you would like to draw out for our panelists today?
Sure, and this is for you, Charles. I'm going to combine two questions into one. One question is how to file for EXR, and the second question is SSA doing anything to aid beneficiaries getting an appointment for an EXR application, or the timeliness in completing the medical review timely? And this person, I don't have a name, but this person is saying that they have had beneficiaries wait 10 months for SSA to complete the review, the medical review on a case, to make a formal determination for EXR.
Well, as far as the first part of that question, how to apply for EXR, they just need to contact their local Social Security office or the 800 toll-free number and give them their identifying information and request to file an expedited reinstatement of benefits. Then what happens is that the local office, once they receive that request for the appointment, an appointment would be made, but once they receive that request, they review the case to make sure that an EXR is going to be what the person actually needs. For instance, if they've never had benefits, they don't want an EXR, they want a new claim, or if their benefits were terminated due to medical reasons as opposed to work activity, then they wouldn't want an EXR. So we have to screen to make sure that's what they want. But to get the appointment, they just need to call their local office or the 800 number, and they'll get that appointment. Obviously, maybe not, but just to be clear, the DDS is responsible for making the decision. So we hope that those decisions would be made within the 6 months of provisional payments, and they generally are. But it's going to depend on each individual case and how accessible the medical records and information is to us. So I know there are outlying cases for sure that is it.
But as a rule, they're going to be made within 6 months.
Thank you, Charles. Appreciate your response there. Anna, we'll stick with you for any other follow-up questions or new questions that have come up in chat.
Sure. Wendy would like to know what is protective filing.
Well, protective filing basically just means that we consider an application filed on the date that the individual contacts us to file it if they meet all the requirements on that date. So what I was talking about with regard to the EXR is, say you contact me today to file an expedited reinstatement of benefits, and we take that request and we send it to the Disability Determination Services and for whatever reason, it comes back medically denied for an EXR. And then you decide you want to go ahead and pursue a new claim because you might have additional disabilities that aren't the same as or related to the disability that you used to have. So what I was saying is that we would use today's date, even though that might be 4 months down the road, we're going to use today's date as your date of filing for the new initial claim because it does have, it does provide protective filing for you. So that would be very handy because in a new claim, you might have the 5 month waiting period that you have to deal with. You have, so it could mean a difference in the amount of benefits that you receive on how early we consider your app filed. Because remember, there's also the retroactivity issue that, you know, depending upon how long you wait to file, then you might have some retroactive benefits due as well based on your protective filing. It basically, I'm not sure that really answered it. It's basically just preserves a date for you, based on a contact with Social Security. And our point today was that your contact to file an EXR is a contact to protect your filing for a new claim should it be necessary.
Thank you, Charles. And let's stay with Anna for one more question from chat. Anna?
I think I'm going to give Charles a break, but you do have way more questions for you, Charles.
But I've tried to answer.
Let's switch to program integrity. And the question may have been already answered, but I'm just going to read it out loud. Do ENs no longer in turn need to submit all IWPs or just maintain them for review when needed?
Tiffany?
Anna, can you repeat the question again, please?
Do ENs no longer in TAR need to submit all the IWPs or just maintain them for review when needed?
If they're no longer in TAR, they just need to maintain them. And then if they're needed, then they need to send those to us. But they no longer have to forward them to us if TAR has been released from them.
Thank you, Tiffany. Thank you, Anna. We'll be back to you, Anna, in a moment for some more questions. Right now, let's switch over to Catherine. I think we have a raised hand. Someone's been waiting patiently. Catherine?
Hi, Derek. Thank you. Diane, you are unmuted. Please ask your question.
Hi again. Diane from Inroads to Opportunities in New Jersey. So, Mr. Killen, can you provide some feedback on how the extended period of eligibility fits in with the trial work period and the extended period of eligibility? Thank you.
I'm sorry, could you rephrase or not rephrase, but re-ask? I'm not sure I understood.
Sure.
I could definitely get you information on the trial work period and the EPE, but what was the EXR involved in all of that?
Yes, it was. So I'm actually a certified benefits counselor, but I think for the benefit of the group who aren't as well versed, and if you mentioned this already, I apologize for missing it, but there is the extended period of eligibility, which is sort of a ticking clock that begins after the trial work period ends, and it isn't, which is 36 months, and then extended period of eligibility doesn't really come into play until well after that. So I was wondering if maybe you could speak to that briefly.
Sure. And sometimes it does take place during that 36 months, but I see what your point is. So what happens is you have the trial work period that we did mention, and that's 9 months that are not necessarily consecutive, in which the individual can work and earn as much as they're able to and still receive all of their benefits. Now, the extended period of eligibility begins with the first month following the end of the trial work period. That's regardless of what your earnings are, it always follows whatever your ninth month of the trial work period is, the very next month is the beginning of your extended period of eligibility. Now, the extended period of eligibility can be in two parts. The first 36 months is what's called the re-entitlement period. During that re-entitlement period, The individual received benefits for any months that they are not working and earning above the substantial gainful activity amount. And any months that they are working and earning above that threshold, then they would not be eligible for a payment. Now, there are some exclusions to that, like the month that we first decide that they're SGA, they can get a payment for that. And they get two payments immediately following that, which are called the grace month, regardless of what they're earning. But as a rule in the EPE, during that 36-month reinstatement period, if you're working at SGA levels, you will not get a payment. If you're not working at SGA levels, you are entitled to a payment. Once that re-entitlement period is over, if at the end of that 36 months you're not working and earning above the substantial gainful activity amount, your benefits just continue and indefinitely. But the first month after that 36-month re-entitlement period that you are determined to have worked above the substantial gainful activity threshold, in other words, your cannibal earnings are above SGA, then that will be your benefit termination month. Your benefits will be terminate. That month begins your 60-month period in which that you can then file for an expedited reinstatement should you have to stop that SGA work due to your condition.
Can I also insert something?
Sure.
Thank you. So during that 36-month period, if you say, you know, you work through trial work and then you work through the three grace period months and then you work for a certain number of months after that and you're in EPE, if you and your benefits have been suspended, not terminated, but suspended, if you stop working within that 36-month period, you can have your benefits reinstated by just calling Social Security and telling them that you've either stopped working or your earnings are now below SGA, and they will reinstate your benefit. So that's just an add-on to everything that you just said. And I just think it's important for people to understand that that's an extra safety net for people if they go, if their benefits are suspended, but they're within that 36-month EPE period and they do stop working or their earnings drop below SGA, they can have it easily reinstated without having to reapply just by literally contacting Social Security. So thank you for that and for letting me butt in, if you will.
Yeah, no, that's that. I appreciate that addition. It was, I guess I shouldn't have just implied, but yeah, for that period, there is no new application or EXR necessary. We're going to monitor your earnings. You need to report earnings if they fall below SGA or if they go above SGA, and we'll pay for those months that are below and we won't pay for any months that are above. But yes, it's absolutely correct that it's on the beneficiary to keep us updated as to what that is. Thank you.
Thank you, Charles, and thank you, Diane, for that exchange and reinforcing some of the flexibilities that are involved with these different work incentives. And Diane has commented to you, Charles, thank you, in the chat. Speaking of chat, let's go back over to Anna. I know chat continues to be active. Anna, do you have another question for our presenters today?
Yes, I have one for program integrity. Catherine needs to know, if you have revision for your IWB and the ticket assignment is not done within 14 days, do you have to rewrite the IWB?
Thank you, Anna. Tiffany?
Hi, thank you. In some instances, we will have you to rewrite the IWP. In other instances, we'll just have you to actually do an amendment to the IWP. My recommendation would be just so you can, you know, each individual, each ticket holder is different. Each individual IWP should be individualized. It's different. So my recommendation for that would be if, you know, just to be clear, send that in to us, to the Program Integrity Department. We'll take a look at it, give you feedback, and let you know if it should be actually rewritten or if an amendment should be done to the IWP.
Thank you very much, Tiffany. I appreciate that. And I think the key there is if you have a question, you can email directly to Program Integrity to get that follow-up and make sure that you're not wondering if you should do it or, you know, create the new one or create the amendment, but they'll be able to give you explicit directions to ensure that you can get to that point with the fewest steps. Thank you, Tiffany. Let's stick with Anna. Any other questions that you'd like to bring up from chat, please? And I'm checking in with you. You're on mute.
I was, sorry. Janine would like to know, is there a waiting period before the beneficiary gets a whole new ticket and participate in the program?
There a waiting period after expedited reinstatement that they can, the beneficiary can return to the program. So I think that one we'll go over to Charles.
I'm trying to make sure I understand the question. Are you saying can they rejoin the ticket while they're in the IRP? Is that what you're basically asking?
Yes, specifically, is there a waiting period after an expedited reinstatement that can a beneficiary participate in the ticket program? Meaning, are they still in the program if that occurs, I believe? And if Janine wants to clarify in chat, please do so.
Well, what I can say is the new period of disability after an EXR doesn't begin until after that 24-month IRP, but there's not a specified waiting period like there is to get a new initial claim for disability. So with regard to the ticket program, if they're eligible for benefits and they meet all the requirements, they're going to be eligible for a ticket. But the ticket doesn't continue without a break, because once they're terminated from disability benefits, their ticket eligibility discontinues as well. So I guess I'm not understanding exactly what the question is, but there's not a specified number of months that they have to wait to rejoin the ticket. We have to get the expedited reinstatement taken, and we have to get the determine if they're re-eligible for the benefit, and then the initial reinstatement period.
Thanks for that. If you'd like, Janine, to pursue that question a little bit further, please do raise your hand. You could do so on MS Teams with the raise hand feature, or you could, if you're, you place that in chat so you're on Teams. We appreciate that to explore it further to make sure that you're getting the information you like. I do see a raised hand. If we can go over to Catherine, please.
Hi, Derek. We have Samuel. Samuel, you're unmuted. Please ask your question.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
I have a question, comment actually for Charles. First of all, I think you've done a whale of a job. I'm also a work incentive counselor, and I would do the extended period of eligibility as well as continuing to talk about what happens after the trial work period for individuals and the EXR, because I have a beneficiary right now that has gone into Social Security to get EXR, and they have tried really, really hard to just have her do a new claim. And I told her that she was eligible for EXR and some retroactive because she hasn't worked since October of 23. But that's another side story. Once again, you've done a whale of a job. Hope to see you come back.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Samuel. We have Janine. Janine, you're unmuted. You'd like to ask your question? Just click your microphone up top, Janine, to unmute, and you can expand on the question in the chat.
So, Catherine, while we try to troubleshoot and get Janine unmuted, why don't we go to the other raised hand in the meantime, please?
Sounds good, Derek. Justin, you are unmuted. You can ask your question now.
Hi, thank you very much. This is a question for Charles. I'm a little confused on information. I'm not sure if it was answered or not, so I was like asking and not getting an answer. In regards to the IRP and the 24 months of payments, of payable months, is that an indefinite time period that those 24 months are covering? Or is it only within a certain time frame?
If I'm understanding the question right, I've tried to answer that in chat, and I wasn't sure I was doing the best job in trying to type that out quickly. There is no time limit in which the 24 months would be used up, but they have to, in order to get a new period of disability, they have to receive 24 months, 24 yep. payable months of benefit. But say the individual files for EXR and they get 6 months worth of benefits because at the time they filed, they weren't working. And 6 months later, they get a great opportunity for a job and they're able to do it. And they go and they work that job for 10 years. Well, they still have, 16 months, or I mean, my math is going to fail me right now, 18 months or whatever left of the IRP. So they would just need to contact Social Security and say, I'm no longer working. And then we can reinstate their benefits based on their last EXR.
Okay, so an EXR is actually kind of an indefinite application of sorts. Is that what I'm hearing?
It is. The only caveat, and the reason I can't tell you exactly is because it varies on a case-by-case basis depending upon how long the delay is, what the disability is. They may be required to go through another medical review at the time that they contact us to have their benefits reinstated, but that wouldn't mean we wouldn't reinstate them. That just means we would let them know we're going to do another medical review, because remember, part of the whole idea of getting an EXR is that you still have to have the same or related condition that you originally had. But that individual that worked 10 years at that job after only getting 6 months of benefit payments still have 18 months of an IRP left. So they would contact us. We would reinstate their benefits. And if needs be, we would do a medical review at that time. And then their benefits could end before the end of their IRP if they no longer meet the medical requirements. But as a rule, assuming that they still have the same condition, it doesn't matter how long it takes them to get those 24 months. It's just that they're not going to get a new period of disability, meaning they won't get a new trial work period or a new EPE until they've at least gotten 24 months of initial reinstatement benefits.
Okay, cool. And then final question. Hopefully this one is a shorter answer. Sorry. Is there a possibility, are people able to backdate applications for an EXR or not really?
To backdate them?
Yeah, like let's say they turns out they were working well under SGA for, let's say, only a few months, but they didn't realize they could get an EXR. Could they backdate for those, you know, those few months?
Well, they can't really backdate the request, but that's what I meant by retroactivity in the initial presentation. Say the individual was, their benefits terminated. And then they continued working for a year or so, and then 6 months goes by, and then now all of a sudden they realize, oh, I could have been requested an EXR 6 months ago. Yeah. Well, they come in and they request the EXR now, and then we would give them the provisional payments starting now. But if they were approved for benefits, we could go back up to 12 months to pay them from the date they actually filed it. So while they won't get those benefits until they're approved, we could go back those 6 months that they weren't working at above SGA and pay them retroactive benefits. And incidentally, those retroactive payments would count as IRP months.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Thanks a lot for the question, Justin and Charles, for your responses there. Catherine, let's work to see if we can get Janine on.
Will do, Derek. Janine, you are unmuted. Go ahead and click your microphone above, and you can ask your question. Okay. We'll work with you a little more, Janine. This time we'll go to Catherine. Catherine, you're unmuted. Just click your microphone above to ask your question.
So my question, I'm just kind of following up on a question I dropped in the chat for IWP and ticket assignment. If we're no longer in TAR, but let's say we have a situation where we're reviewing the IWP meeting and the IWP, and there are some revisions that we want to do. Let's say the signature on the IWP, is it ever okay to go ahead and assign the ticket, even though maybe it's been 21 days since the signature, or does it always have to adhere to that 14-day window?
Hello, Derek. I'll help Tiffany with this question. So for the assignment, there are times when we do allow ticket assignment to occur after the 14 days, but we try to treat those on a case-to-case basis, trying to understand why the ticket was not assigned at the time of the signature. So we would also want to review to see if there are any changes to the IWP and determine if an amendment is needed.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Catherine, for your question, and Lakeisha for hopping in to help us out there. Appreciate that response. Catherine, Jed, I know that we're still working on the microphone issue. If I just have you hop in here, Catherine, to tell me if we should proceed or if we have an opportunity to get Janine on. Catherine, Jed, I have you on mute. If you could check in.
Hi. Yes, you do, Derek. We're working with Janine. We've advised to contact EN Operations. Unable to get the microphone to work, sir.
Okay. Thank you. And sorry about that, Janine. Sometimes technology doesn't work with us, but we will provide the EN Operations email box for anyone who has a question that isn't able to be answered today to submit, and we'll ensure that the appropriate panelist has the ability to get that response to you. In the meantime, let's go back to Anna and check in if there's any questions in chat for our presenters.
Yes, we have one from Aaron. During ERE, can TTW-SSDI beneficiaries receive unemployment and SSDI at the same time? I ask in my role as an EN. Please advise about the policy.
Thank you. Aaron? So we still have Aaron with us, but Aaron, you're on mute. If you could come off. Here, I see you turning on there. Did you capture that question, or do you need Anna to repeat it?
Sorry, it cut out for a second. Can you repeat that? I only caught half of it.
No problem. During ERE, can TTW-SSDI beneficiaries receive unemployment and SSDI at the same time? I ask in my role as an EN, please advise about the policy.
Okay, so that is a more specific benefits question. So I would suggest that if you have ticket holders that have kind of more general benefits questions, that you direct them to their local SSA field office to answer their questions, or if it's kind of more specific questions about how work impacts benefits, I would suggest that you refer them to the Ticket to Work helpline in those instances.
Thank you, Aaron. Appreciate you coming on and working to do that. It sounds like it's a dual benefits question, and eligibility and how work potentially impacts that. If you would like, you could also submit that question to us at the EN Operations inbox, and we could pursue that for a more detailed response after some research with the team. Anna, we'll stick with you to see if there's any more questions in chat.
Ray would like to know, from time to time, we come across beneficiaries that are on a second ticket. If the beneficiary returns to work before the 24 month completes, they may not be entitled to a second set of nine TWL months. Is there a way to know if they requested an EXR or a new initial application?
Thanks, Anna, for the question. Charles, presenting on EXR, this is an interesting question. Do you have a response for us there?
Was the only question, is there a way to know if they filed an EXR or a new initial claim?
Correct. And yes. Basically the idea of having a second ticket.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, if they don't have like the receipt that they got when they filed, then they can call and ask Social Security what they filed. But the receipt that they got when they filed would tell them whether they requested an EXR or a new initial claim. A good identifier is if they're getting a presumptive payment, the payments for the EXR, then that's what they filed. They wouldn't be getting those with a new initial claim. I don't want to give a definitive answer, and I don't mean that I won't ever. I want to research a little bit more about when the ticket is active after the EXR is approved. My assumption was that it's not active, and you can't reassign a ticket until you get a new initial claim. And I don't mean, sorry, I apologize. A new period of disability, which happens after the 24-month reinstate IRP period is over. But I want to review that, and I'll certainly reach out to Derek and the folks at the TPM so that they can let you all know that, what I find out about that. That is something that I know I have the information for. I can't pull it up this quickly while I'm answering all the other questions. So, but as far as knowing which one you filed, if they're not getting the payments, and then they might have gotten a new initial claim filed. There are circumstances where they might have filed both at the same time, but they should have gotten a receipt at the time, or they can check on their MySSA account if they have it. That will tell them what's pending, whether it's an EXR or an initial claim. So there's several ways to find out what they've filed for.
Thank you, Charles. If you want to circle back with us with any more details, we could try to include that in the summary that we prepare as well.
Sure.
And I'll stick with you for another question from chat.
Catherine would like to know, once you are out of car, is it ever okay to assign a ticket beyond the 14-day window after the IWP was signed?
And Lakeisha, can we defer that question to you, please?
Sure, I can. Can Anna, do you mind repeating?
Once you are out of TAR, is it ever okay to assign a ticket beyond the 14-day window after the IWP was signed?
And this kind of goes back to a similar question with the 14-day window. So the 14-day window is preferred. However, you can extend outside of that 14-day window. But again, we would want to understand why the extension was required, and then if an IWP either needs revision or an amendment added. So typically, if you're not meeting that 14-day, there are circumstances, whether it's related to the EN or the beneficiary, that is pausing the actual assignment. And you can always reach out to Program Integrity, and we can respond directly based on the situation.
Thank you, Lakeisha. So 14 days is a bit of the standard, but there are case-by-case opportunities. And to get clarity on your specific cases, please reach out to Program Integrity. Anna, let's go back to you for any more questions coming through from chat.
Not necessarily a question, but both Kevin and Karen are sharing experiences. I guess Kevin is saying that they have assigned tickets after EXR approval, prior to the IRP completion. And Karen is saying, if I might share my own experience, I had a beneficiary sign up for ticket during the IRP. We eventually unassigned the ticket as a client lost motivation to work once they understood they were in the IRP and waiting for a new TWP. And Kevin just posted the POMs with more information. Thank you, Kevin.
So thank you for reading out those posts for clarity for all. And then the POMs that covers ticket eligibility specifics. And so if you want to go for a deeper dive into there.
Yeah. And I had just found those POMs as well. So I don't see who it was. Kevin, I think they said, thank you for posting those. But yeah, so it is very clear in that particular POMs that all it takes is for the individual to be approved for the EXR. They don't have to finish the IRP to reassign their ticket. But from the period of time from termination until they're reapproved for EXR, they're not eligible for the ticket, but they can get a ticket to reassign once they get reapproved for EXR.
Thank you, Charles. And if you're not familiar with the term POMS, which we hear all the time,
I'm so sorry.
It's not a problem. It's a program operations manual system, but it gives the policy statements around ticket program eligibility. And I think it would be something worth reviewing if you haven't checked it out or if as a refresher as well. It is about 6 minutes to the conclusion of the meeting. I'm going to go back to Anna for any more questions coming through from chat before we close up.
Kathy is asking where they can locate the newsletter that Rob referenced at the beginning of the call.
Your Ticket to the Red Book newsletter that I believe is an internal SSA newsletter. Aaron, if we could have you come on and respond to that question.
I can actually take that one.
Thanks, Rob. Go ahead.
Yeah. The purpose, I guess the audience is targeted internally for operations folks. It may be a bit technical and somewhat hard to follow, but I will check on my end and see if we can make that available and perhaps put it on the website or make it available in some other way. So that's an action item for me.
Thank you very much, Rob. And if it is possible to be posted on the Your Ticket to Work website or shared with the All EN Call meeting summary, then we would certainly include it depending on what Rob finds out. So thanks for that question. Anna, we have time for one final question or comment. Go ahead.
Teresa would like to know why local offices are taking cash benefits and stopping them when a proposed decision letter of a possible of overpayment. And she thought that it could not stop until the appeal is completed.
So we have a question about the, I thought they could not stop until the appeal is completed. Is that correct or is that incorrect? Is there one of our panelists that would like to take that question? A possible overpayment? If we're not going to be able to answer that one, what we could do is, Teresa, we have your question. We can capture it. We have a couple others that we need to follow up on, and we'll be able to get guidance. What we do suggest is when these situations arise, if you have a question, you could email EN Service, and we'll try to assist the team on that end and providing guidance throughout the year, not just during the quarterly all-in calls. But we have that one. We've captured a couple of others that we'll follow up on directly with you after some other research is done. And then the more general summary of the event will be captured as well. The time is now 2:27. At this point, we do need to move to close to wrap up today's quarterly all-in call, and I'd ask to advance to the next slide, please. So as is custom, we'd like to remind you about some upcoming events. And on this slide, we advertise our next quarterly all-in call. This is scheduled for Tuesday, June 18th at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So please do schedule to join us there. If you do have topic suggestions or feedback on the all-in call, we appreciate your comments throughout, and you know, Justin indicating you appreciated the content is provided too. But you can also email us at enoperations@yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. I know firsthand when your comments come in, they're provided to Social Security, and they do drive the topics of these meetings, and we appreciate that content. Also, we have some upcoming events. Next week on Wednesday, March 27th, is the next WISE webinar, How Work Will Affect My Medicare and Medicaid. This is a very popular session. We encourage everyone at your ENs to register to attend and to share this with ticket holders who may find value in the content. You can register at the Choose Work website. Our next EN Essentials will be on April 10th. At 1 p.m. Eastern time. This session is entitled At Your Service, Who to Contact on the Ticket Program Manager Team. We'll review each department, who to contact, how to contact, and importantly, the specific tasks and services that are performed in each department with some tips about how to have successful engagement. We're really looking forward to that session. And then on May 7th, you can bring your payments questions to the next quarterly all-in payments call scheduled from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern time on the 7th of May. And with that, on behalf of our presenters today from Social Security and the Ticket Program Manager and our production team, I'd like to thank you for joining today's quarterly all-in call. We wish you a very good afternoon, and this now concludes today's meeting.